PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. You can find me on Twitter at CanadanGolf. And we're actually on location today at the THP Tech Studio, and we have a really cool guest with us this week. His name is Colt Ford.
Yes, sir.
You might know him from golf. You might know him from an awesome career in country music. Super excited to have you here today, and welcome.
Thanks, man. I'm glad to be here. This is super cool. I found my new hangout place.
Yeah.
I had to get a key to the house and everything.
There you go. This is cool. Yeah. So, we're sitting actually right on the hitting bay. And this is kind of the fun part, because your story's changed a little bit since your junior golf days.
Absolutely.
But you're kind of like us. As soon as you get into a place like this, you got clubs everywhere. We got four sites set up,
like
ready to go.
Like a straight golf nerd right out of it. Yeah, it's like, like a kid at Christmas.
I'm surprised we got the podcast going so quickly. I figured we'd be at least 200 balls in before we got going.
That'd be awesome. That might be next.
Are you playing any golf right now?
I haven't played much, actually, since the Diamond Resort tournament ended up in January. I played good at that, the deal we did with the LPGA Tour, and that was a lot of fun. But I hadn't played much since then, because based on where I've been, the weather's been not that great, and so I'm ready to get back to it. It's starting to get a little nicer, and I'm ready to get back to playing a little bit.
Nice. Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm down here in Nashville from Cincinnati,
right?
And I'm four rounds into my 2021 season, so for me, it's always like, hey, who knows what's coming?
Well, Nashville weather's crazy too anyway. Yeah. I mean, one day it's 78, the next day it's 27 and snowing, so I don't know. It's a little weird here.
Yeah, so are you getting to travel much right now? And when you do, obviously you haven't for a little bit, but when you do, is this normally the time when you play golf?
I normally play golf on the road if I can. I mean, you know, when you go as much as I do pre-pandemic, yeah. Then, you know, when you get off the road and you have a couple of days, it's like you'd like to see your kids or family, you know, whatever. It's hard to be gone for a couple of weeks and then go, I'm going to the golf course now. So it's a tough balance. So normally on the road is where I try to play, and it keeps you from just sitting stuck on a tour bus, and you get to see all kinds of different courses. And sometimes I'll play some of the world's greatest, and sometimes we're in a place where we're like, well, it's a Muni and it's $22 and you get a free hot dog. So they're all fun too. They're all different.
Yeah. We have listeners from all over the country and various countries actually. But a lot of THPers who are involved in the community talking golf, talking about their local favorites. Is there a place right now that you could say in America that is like your mecca of golf if you had to pick?
Wow. I don't know. I mean, there's just so many good places out there. There's so many interesting, you know, and it depends on the time of year and the weather. I mean, I don't know that I could put my finger on it, you know, one particular place, because there's just so many good spots now for golf and a lot of different. And honestly, the pandemic, if anything good did come out of it, it really helped get the game of golf back exploding again. So sure. I'm happy about that. Mm-hmm. I'm somebody that's, although I do music now and everything, I love the game, and mm-hmm. I love, you know, I taught for a long time. I played the tour professionally. I played in college, and you know, it's like I still want to grow the game. I still want to help other people be a part of the game and want to see it grow, because it's just such a wonderful thing that you can play with every skill level of player. That's what makes golf so fun. I mean, like, I'm friends with a lot of professional athletes. I mean, Ray Allen and I play golf all the time. But I can't play in one-on-one with Ray Allen. Wouldn't be worth a shit. That wouldn't be fun at all, because I mean, I probably would not have a chance. But with golf, it's, you know, that's what makes it cool.
One of the things I wanted to talk about this week, and you kind of bumped it up on the list, was I always found golf from in every facet of the way the great equalizer.
Yeah,
it brings people together who are from uniquely different backgrounds and creates common ground.
Absolutely.
Do you think there's any other game or sport out there that can accomplish what golf does in that way?
I don't see any other sport that can do that, especially because you can play to your, you know, from a little kid to your old. My dad's 85, he still plays. So I don't know any other sport that does that. And if you've never, for people that don't play golf, it's hard to explain it to them, that they don't understand to be out with three of your buddies or whatever and outside experience. Golf course is beautiful on a beautiful day. It's not really anything like it. It's just such a unique thing. It tells a lot about your character. And, you know, I've seen some people that I really like, and I played golf with them, and I thought, wow, okay, that's not the person I thought it was. And then I've played golf with some people that I wasn't sure about, and I'm like, wow, he's really cool. I mean, I think golf tells a lot about just human being. But it's just fun. It's just fun to be out there, even when you play crappy, which I still do. I do a lot now, a lot more than I used to.
Yeah, and how hard is it for you because you don't get to play the same way you used to? And I want to take this in a much grander scale if we can. You've seen the level of golf played at basically the extremes.
Right.
And what is it like for you at this point in your career where you're not playing as much as you probably want? So maybe the scoring is not where you expect it to be. How is that transition for you? Because I went through it, certainly not at your level, but I came to a point in my golfing, we'll call it career, but life, where I realized maybe I should stop taking this so seriously because I'm not making money on it. Maybe I should have some fun.
Exactly.
Did you ever have to find that part of your life?
Oh, yeah, because it was very difficult. As when I quit playing, obviously, and when I really started doing music, music became such a priority for me. So for a couple of years, I would hit balls every now and then. I mean, I just was so busy working, trying to figure it out. But I loved the game, and I missed it. So when I came back, I became famous in music as a fat guy. And I'm not necessarily a skinny guy now, but I was up to like 330 pounds. But now I'm down to about 220. So my golf game, I wanted to do things with my golf swing that I've instinctually done my entire life. And I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that really made me mad. And that really made me frustrated and gave me a lot of frustration with the game. And then not being able to practice and play. Because when you've played at the level that I've played at, you would like, I mean, you can't help it. I mean, I've won multiple professional golf tournaments. I mean, you cannot help but that if it's in you to kind of take over and want to do good and want to play good. So having fun with it and being, you know, learning to let stuff go and not let, it's a big deal. I was just been chatting with a kid named Trent Phillips that plays at the University of Georgia. He's an All-American, one of the best players in the country. And we ate dinner the other night when I was home in Georgia. And, you know, he's so ungodly talented. But he would beat himself up, wear himself out. And that's what I was telling him. I was just been texting with him back, just trying to encourage him. Like, look, you can't get those shots back. I mean, I remember the first time I went to work with Dr. Bob Rotella. He said, the hardest thing I've ever had to do was to get great athletes to try less.
Yeah.
To get out of their own way.
They say golf's a next shot game, right?
It is, and that's what I said. It took me a long time to just go, I mean, dude, after you've hit the shot, you don't get it back. Mm-hmm. There is no do. I mean, like, you might as well let it go. And I remember Dr. Rotella, it's funny, as you get older, you know, you remember back things you learned when you were younger, and I'm like, one of my best friends was caddying for me at the time when I was playing, and he goes, so some of the stuff that you say to yourself in court, do you talk to your friend Bobby like that? I'm like, no. He goes, why? I said, because he wouldn't be my friend if I talked to him like that. And he goes, so why do you talk to yourself like that? You have to be your own best friend on the golf course. And I never really thought about it like that. But as I came into play in some of the celebrity events, Pebble Beach and everything, the Tahoe Tournament, you want to play good. And the problem for me is people know my history. Mm-hmm. So they want to see. It, you know, and it's hard for some of them to look, especially to look at me and go, wait, this you used to do this? I mean, like, it's cost some guys some money to figure that out. But, yeah, I mean, it's just getting comfortable and letting stuff go. I mean, I've beat myself up out there, and I've had some old friends of mine that still play out there. They're like, why are you getting so mad? You don't have to do this anymore. Like, your livelihood doesn't depend on this. And trying to get into that attitude is very helpful.
The transition for me is when I realized I took a step back. I played around with two guys who were just thrilled to be angry.
Right.
It seemed like every opportunity to get mad or slam a club or stomp their foot, whatever it is, it seemed like it became a hobby for them.
Right, almost play for that.
And I thought to myself, man, I don't want to play with this guy. And then it was a round or two later, I just couldn't get anything right, and I started getting into that same mentality.
Oh, no question.
And I thought to myself, I'm doing to my playing partners what those guys were doing to me.
Think about Homer Kelly, the great teacher my mind is terrible. Talk Crenshaw and Tom Kite. Good Lord, what was his name?
I'll let you chase that as I finish this thought.
Yeah.
My perspective from that point on was, why don't I play for everyone else?
right,
and let the scores come. And I'd never played better golf the years following. And that was the funny part. You talk about convincing guys not to try so damn hard. It was like that moment for me where it became, and I'm certainly not as accomplished as the guys you're talking about, but it was eye-opening for me to realize if you take all that weight off your shoulders and just play for everyone else and have a great time, golf becomes easier.
Right.
It's almost like you're...
Well, in every other sport, if you think about it, every other sport is like, my son was a great baseball player. It's like you could smack him in the face and come on, let's go. And baseball, football, and that adrenaline. Golf is not like that. Yeah, you can have it, but you have to learn to manage it and go, okay, calm down and settle down. I mean, you can't just go crazy like that.
Right.
So back to the point where you're talking about, I'm just drawing a Harvey Pinnock. Sorry.
Okay.
Harvey Pinnock.
Great books. Go read those books.
Right. But Harvey, I'm good friends with Mr. Crenshaw. I've known Mr. Ben a long time. He's super sweet and one of the greatest guys I've ever met. I know Mr. Kite a little bit, but both of them, when they got ready to turn pro, he took them both to dinner. And I said, well, what's advice going out to turn pro? He said, don't go to dinner with bad putters. You think that scene sells it. Seems so stupid and it seems so trivial, but he's right. And I remember being at tour school one year, and we got to this place, and the greens were awful. And it was three or four of us staying together, and everybody was bitching. And I literally got my stuff and went and checked in the hotel by myself. I made it through the qualifying, and none of the other three guys did.
Really?
Because they were all just in that mode of bitch, complain, greens. But I mean, Bob Rotella said, when you get there, you should pray for bad weather and bad greens. Bad weather, you eliminate half the field.
Mm-hmm.
Bad greens, you eliminate another half the field. He's like, now it's, and you've heard Koepka talk about that, like, I feel like I only got to beat X number. And there's a lot of truth to that.
Wow.
But don't go to dinner with bad putters. You it seems like, but you saw, just by what you said, it started affecting you.
Yeah,
you started becoming them.
Right.
And then it's like, wow, okay.
And you made a great point with other sports. I grew up playing hockey.
Yeah.
And
so hockey, you use your adrenaline. Yeah. You check somebody on the board. Right. You fight. Yeah, I mean, like, you can't do it. It'd be fun if they had fights in golf. Well, but I mean, maybe.
You make a mistake in hockey, you go as hard as you can until you fix that mistake.
Right.
You make a mistake in golf, you have to slow down.
Going as hard as you can will generally make you make a bunch more mistakes.
Exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. Yeah.
And we're home of the Preds right now.
Right.
Big group there. Do you get to many Predators games?
This is no lie. I was sitting around a couple years ago, and I was like, you know what? I have never been to a hockey game in my life. I grew up in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a little kid, you had the Atlanta Flames, mm-hmm. but they went to Calgary, obviously. And then you came back with the Thrashers, but they were in Atlanta, and I just didn't go. I played golf with some of the guys, and I got to think, I'm like, I'm good friends with Wayne Gretzky. I'm good friends with, you know, with Jeremy Roenick, you know, guys like that. I mean, it's like, he's some of the greatest hockey player, the greatest hockey player of all time, and I've played golf with him, and I've never been to a game.
I'll confirm that right now. Gretz is the greatest of all time.
There's no question. I mean, when you look at those numbers, it's just like, it's staggering. Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, I just had never been. I played with Joe Sakic, and I was in Colorado a couple of years ago in Denver doing something else, and I just happened to see the, and I called Joe. I was like, can I go to a game? He's like, well, I was like, tonight? He's like, sure. Put me two tickets right on the glass. I'm like, oh my God, this is unbelievable.
It's intense.
Yeah, man. Like, I'd never been. It was awesome to watch.
Right. So you name dropped a little bit there, and I love it because we see this with the pro-ams and the guys who are out there, obviously, the DJ connection with Wayne and some of these other guys who are enormous in their own facets of life, but then come to golf and sort of get humbled by the process.
Right.
We talked about golf being a little bit of the great equalizer. Is it weird or exciting or just different to get together with a group like that who are famous in their own ways and then just all come together and play the game?
It's just fun.
Yeah.
It's just different. I mean, and again, back to what we're talking about golf, it has a way of uniting people. And I've played golf with multiple people out on the road, you know, because I'm by myself a lot of times, and I get paired, and I'm like, I've become friends with this guy. You know, I'm friends with him for 10 years, and I got an older guy in Bakersfield. I met sort of through Dennis Paulson. His friend brought this guy, and I played golf with him, and I've been friends with him for 10 years. I mean, Dan and his wife, I mean, every time I'm out that way, I play golf with him. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what makes golf so cool, you know, is that kind of thing and those relationships. I remember playing a show for the first tee for Nature Valley, the Champions event that they do at Pebble Beach. So Steve John runs both of those events, and he asked me to come play a show. That's something I started doing because of the kids. You know, the kids playing that. The kids that come out with all their pros and they switch it up and play it. In the middle of my show, I kind of stopped and talked for about 5 minutes, which is not normally what I do, but I wanted to tell those kids, I'm like, listen, the pros that you're playing with, and I realize everybody here wants to play the tour. Let's be honest. You're not all going to play the tour. Right. Let's just keep it real. Right. So that being said, but there's all these CEOs here as well. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you need to meet these people, cultivate the relationships, stay in touch with them, reach out to them, because you don't realize it right now, but these are people that make the world go round. I mean, there's some big time CEOs here and people like, and they'll remember if you handled yourself correctly, if you presented yourself correctly, if you did the right things. And maybe you get out of college and go, I can't play any golf anymore, but you call Mr. Smith and he's like, I remember this kid, John, he's a sharp kid. We've stayed in touch. I'm going to give him a job. That's important. It was funny that a lot of the tour players and were like, wow, that was a cool that you said that. I mean, yeah, I'm up there playing my music and they're having fun, but why not tell them something that obviously when you're young like that, you don't know, because I didn't know. I remember thinking when I was, you know, 18, like, what do you do when you're 30? You just go off like an old dog and die in the woods? It's like, now I'm 51 going, man, I still feel all right. I mean, so golf's just a neat game like that.
So there's one thing I'm really curious to talk to you about today. It's the partnership we have on THP with Squares Golf Shoes.
Yeah.
We've enjoyed the discussion around the unique design elements. Now, I believe you're a pretty heavy proponent of the shoe.
I am.
What is it about that product that is so enticing for a guy like you?
So it started out, I just saw them online. And I sent, I like to do my own social media. Mm-hmm. I don't like people to talk for me. You can generally tell it's me by the spelling or the slang or something stupid that I say. And I'm like, no, most people don't talk like that. So, of course, it was me. But I just like doing that. So I sent him a message. I was like, hey, what? I have terribly flat feet. Always have. I've struggled my whole life. When I was young growing up in Athens, they took me to the doctor. And he said, well, Frankie Sinkwitz was flat-footed. And he won the Heisman Trophies in the NFL Hall of Fame. Flat-foot Frankie. And they're like, leave him alone until he has problems. So years go by, nothing's done. All of a sudden, I'm, you know, junior in high school, and I'm All-American in golf and baseball scholarship. But it's too late now, like, no surgery, and I'm not wearing, you know, I'm not going full-on braces, you know, on my legs. I'm not going Forrest Gump at that point at 16 or 17 because I'm too interested in girls and all that stuff and being cool. And so it's just something you get used to. Well, as I got older, when I started coming back to playing golf, golf shoes had gotten more like sneakers, and they started getting really soft. Oh, these are light. These are soft. And I'm like, I can't walk around a golf. My feet were killing me. I needed more like the FootJoy Classic kind of thing. I needed that firm. And then I found a friend of mine, Tommy Armour III, playing the Champions Tour, and Phil Mickelson got me some G4s, which was awesome. And I love that shoe. And I met Massimo and everything, and that was a great shoe. But so I just sent these guys a message, and Bob, the CEO, sent me a message back and said, I'll send you a pair to try. And I just thought they were great, and we just cultivated that relationship. And now it's like, I'm not ever putting another golf shoe on my foot. Not only is it that stable for me, like to be able, in the Diamond Resort, I had some of the new designs, a couple of them, which I designed, the new Country Sole and the American Sole. I did those designs for those shoes right out of the box, right on my feet, walk 18 holes, no problem. It's the most comfort, the most stability I've ever had. And people are just now, because it's a new thing, the whole ground force and all that kind of thing, people are a little maybe weary or not sure about it, but it's a real thing. The science is really there. I mean, yeah. This golf shoe increases your stability enough to add anywhere from 2 or 3 to 5 or 6 miles an hour to your golf swing. Doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it is in golf, and it is if you were talking to a state trooper somewhere. 5 or 6 miles an hour could be a big difference.
So you mentioned just pure fatigue in your feet when you play, and I think the basic perception of golf shoes out there is the lighter you get and the softer the material is, the less likely your feet will have for fatigue. But you're actually
I feel it the exact other way. Yeah, I feel it the exact opposite.
And that narrative is just not shared right now. That's very interesting to me.
It's just a new thing. And I meant, like, if you, my era, I'm 51. So the era, I talked with a lot of tour players and, you know, I taught for a long time, taught a lot of tour players, still help some every now and then, is I learned to play golf from the ground up. Most of the kids today learn from the top down. Mm-hmm. Very different. I remember watching a video of with Mr. Nicklaus with Jack Grout, and he was working on his footwork. And he was just, and the ball was just going all over the place. But he wasn't worried about the golf ball. He was worried about what he was trying to do with his feet. Mm-hmm. And as soon as Mr. Grout said, that's it, he went, okay. And the next swing, the ball went, pew! I meant just like a rocket. And it's like, they don't realize how important the ground is into what you're doing. And I think Squares Golf Shoes is the leading proponent in that area. And some other people are trying to chase him now and all that. And I get people want to look cool or think something looks cool or whatever. I mean, and I get all that, but I want to perform better and I want to feel good too. And Squares just does that for me. There's not even anything close, really. I meant like the golf shoe, like I'll never wear anything else. They're just that good.
Speaking of looking cool, Faldo just released a great looking
with the
master
green
shoe.
How about
I'll tell
that?
You what. We talked a tiny bit about Augusta once you arrived here at the tech studio, but as soon as you see that green and yellow, you think of one thing pretty much only.
If you're a golfer, you do.
Unless you're a huge Oregon fan.
Right, right.
Or I guess Baylor. That design immediately spoke to me.
Yeah.
And it'll be fun to see how Squares adapts their profiles as they move forward, but I'm excited that different aspects of those design features are coming to light. A lot of people talk about the square toe from an alignment perspective, but one thing I researched a little bit about was it's not just that. It's about your feet not being suffocated in the toe
box. So, yeah, for me, again, it's that toe box is wide in the front. And I get the alignment thing. I don't personally do – I mean, because everybody sets up different, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not – for me, I love the alignment thing. I love that my right toe, when I follow through, can post up easier and I get it. I mean, it doesn't hurt. I mean, but that the toe box is just incredible for that. And I would get done with some of the other shoes. I remember getting done at Pebble and just in tears, honestly. Like, I got to get to the car and get some ice on my feet.
Wow.
Because I'm literally in tears. They hurt so bad. And I just don't have that anymore. I mean, like, it's just unbelievable. And having these new designs, the country. Bob is so creative. And the good thing, they didn't just throw a shoe out there. They spent years doing research and really studying ground force and how everything works. And, you know, could you go, okay, I'm going to try to make something that looks super sexy and sleek? It's like, well, I meant, yeah, but what if it doesn't perform? I meant, like, it needs to perform and still look good. And I think they've done that. I mean, and he let me do these two new designs. So the country soul is white with kind of red, white, and blue. It's got music notes and guitar and a guitar, red, white, and blue guitar. They look super cool. And then the American Soul is a red, white, and blue camo. Like, people are going to want to buy this shoe. I mean, not just because the shoe is great, because it's American, man. I mean, it's
have a little fun.
Yeah, and it's cool looking, and it's American. We're giving money to John Daly's foundation that helps soldiers and stuff when you're buying these shoes. If you're buying the American Soul or the Country Soul, there's money going to a good cause. I mean, it's good. It's really it's just a fantastic product. And I couldn't be – well, I just finally signed my deal to be an ambassador. I brought cool. John Daly to him, and I couldn't be more proud to be a part of this company.
Well, you said American, and I don't know that I could think of anything more American than Colt Ford.
It's pretty American, yeah.
What is the origin there, and what was it like for you getting started in country music as you transitioned out of golf?
You know, if you know, again, I look back now, and people ask me a lot about the story, you know, because the story is weird. When you go, wait, this kid was a junior All-American golfer, top recruit in the country, college All-American, played professional golf, and he also made a rap record, or a country record, whatever, like they didn't understand. And I realize it's strange when I look back at it. But for me, my mom always told me, God never gives you anything he doesn't intend for you to use. So I was good at music. I was good athlete. And I was obviously born really good looking. I mean, people can't see it here. So I got some bit. I just had to use what I was good at, you know. And so it was never weird to me. It's just what I did. But it's been a unique journey. And when I came to Nashville, they had never really seen anything like me, and certainly at 320 pounds with a cowboy hat on, and at 36, 7 years old, you know, trying to, they're like, wait, what? And that, so everybody was fascinated with the music. They were like, this is incredible. We have no idea what to do with it. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, we started our own label. The CEO of Zaxby's is a great friend of ours, and my best friend, Shannon Houchins, and the three of us own our label, and we just had to do it. We just kind of forged our own path, I guess.
So I did see the label, and I think if you look back, and especially a lot of the interviews that have been done with you in the past, it seems like the perspective of you being a pioneer in that style of country music, it is definitely, you can take a lot of ownership to that.
I guess, you know, when people say that, you created this genre, and I'm like, I honestly don't see it that way. I wasn't trying to do anything. I wasn't trying to create anything. And they're all like country rap. I'm like, if you listen to history of country music, I mean, where do you think Devil Went Down to Georgia is? I mean, Charlie was one of my mentors and great friends. And I mean, there's songs like Smoke, 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 That Cigarette and Hot Rod Lincoln. I mean, recitation talking records have been around before the term rap was ever even invented. Mm-hmm. And by the way, songs rhyme generally. So, I mean, like, I don't understand, like, I'm like, I didn't create anything. I certainly put my spin on it. And it was funny, when I came in, there was like, maybe, Colt, you're way over here. Country music's right here. And now, this new record I'm about to put out, I swear, I sound like Merle Haggard compared to some of the country that's out there today. Mm-hmm. So it's cool, though. Music, that's what makes it great. It's supposed to change. And I mean, Carrie Underwood don't sound like Loretta Lynn to me either. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, I mean, I appreciate all the different styles and everything. And, you know, and it certainly has allowed for some different things to happen. And that's what makes it great. It all moves around and flows, just like the game of golf. I mean, what I grew up playing is not what these boys are playing with today. I mean, golf balls, golf shoes, golf gloves. I mean, it's all different. It changes. That's what it does.
I think being unique is so critical in today's day and age. You don't have the ability to blend in anymore and have significant success.
Right.
I think it's pretty telling in what you're doing, and there's some guys who have had great success following your footsteps doing the same thing. Do you ever feel like you become more of a mentor in that sort of process?
Maybe. And a lot of the young guys, I think that's important. I mean, I think it's important. Golf has always done a great job with that, with mentoring the game. I think we could all do a better job in the music world of doing that. Because, look, when you don't know, or you've been, this has happened and you've won an award, you know, won some kind of singing show or whatever, you think you know what the music business is about, but you really don't know. And if you don't have somebody or a veteran come along going, hey man, don't do that, or be careful with this, or watch that, I mean, you don't know. And then you're thrown around with agents that all they want to do is make money. So they're not telling them no. They're not telling them not to do things. So I constantly try to find younger artists. If they ask me, I'm like, hey man, well, this is what I think. And I do that with artists that were older than me or that have been doing it longer than me. I mean, I constantly ask questions. I'm amazed when we do festivals that more artists aren't up there watching. I mean, I watch everybody because I want to see what they do. I'm curious to see what they do that makes that be so cool or whatever. So I think mentorship's important, not just in music, but in life in general. I think we could all, as a country, we could do better at that, like taking somebody younger under our wing beside your kid and going, hey, man, here's what you want to do and here's what you can do. Be careful. And it doesn't take but a minute, really.
So
it's not that difficult.
I absolutely agree, and I love that. A big part of what THB does is engage with the community, provide connections to the industry itself.
Yeah.
But also gives us an opportunity on our forums to educate in a way that, and we actually do this at the member level. It doesn't need to be leadership or, you know, staff on the site. The whole concept is someone asks a question, you get a bunch of answers. It's rarely identical.
Right.
And it's great because you get that different experience from that different style of golfer. And I think that's what I love so much about forums and that kind of community. Maybe not social media, because it can get a bit hairy over there. But at least on our forum, it seems like everyone's out looking out for each other and finding the right solution or the right answer in a multitude of different directions. So I could definitely relate from our side as well.
Yeah.
But I do want to go a little bit back into your music, because I'm curious. When you started out, obviously there were groups that sort of helped you to find your sound and brought you closer to what you were looking for. Who would you say kind of started from the back of your head to create that?
I'm such a weird person with music. It's not, I mean, that's a show within itself. Because yeah. people, I'm like, I'm just a big pot of gumbo. I mean, like, I love so much stuff. First of all, I loved old country because you grew up, it's your environment. So my mom and dad, I mean, you know, that's what they grew up listening to. And so I love that. But my mom and dad loved Elvis. So I loved Elvis. I thought it was cool. I love the way he danced. And nobody in my family really did music but me. But I could play about any song you want on the drums when I was 10, 11 years old. I just would listen to it. I could listen to it and play it. I'd rhyme words, I'd beat on the dash, you know, drive my mama crazy. She's got tapes that she would record of her saying a word. She'd say a word, and I'd have to say a word that rhymed with it. Now, at the time, I didn't think that meant a thing, that it turned into something that's made me a lot of music, putting money that words that rhyme together. But, you know, it's just an amazing journey for me that I've been on. And there's a lot of similarities in some ways, and there's not a lot. But I mean, in golf, with music, it's kind of the same thing. Like, when I'm up there on stage, I'm kind of by myself. I mean, you can try to blame your caddy, or you can try, and a lot of guys do. And you can try to blame the band, and a lot of guys do that too. Yeah. But I meant, like, it's, you know, it's kind of, you're up there by yourself. You kind of got to, you got to do it and own it.
So when you look at golf, and I'm trying to pair this up a little bit, how you paved your own way into the music industry, didn't really chase anyone's stylish sound.
I didn't know any better. I was so hard-headed, and I guess that's another thing my mama told me. But when I chased a lot of things in music mm-hmm. over the years, and it's, I would say, here's a similarity in golf. As a really good player or a tour player, I could take a tour player to any teacher in the world, no matter what their theory is, and he could do it. But that doesn't mean it's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of how, you know, that's kind of the same thing with me with music. It's like, I just didn't know anybody. I just wanted to make this. And when I went in there, I chased a lot of different things. I was like, I can do that. I'll try that. That didn't work. Oh, I can do that too. I'll try that. And so I was chasing music. And when I finally went in there, I was like, all right, I'm just going to be myself and record some songs and be 100% who I am. That's when Colt Ford was kind of born, and Ride Through the Country came out, and people were like, I've never heard anything like it. I'm like, I was just trying to make the music that made sense to me.
So as we correlate that back into golf, I see a guy out there nowadays, and you'll probably guess pretty quickly who I'm talking about, who's 100% doing it his own way, super authentic to himself and his process, but he's also catching a lot of flack for it in a bunch of different directions. You know I'm talking about Bryson.
Absolutely.
And I'm incredibly curious to know if you see a lot of similarities in what you did with music as to what he's doing with golf.
Maybe. I mean, I'm sure there are. I mean, and I know Bryson a little bit. He is a nice kid, and I think it's unbelievable what he's doing. You know, and people they freak out like the other at the Palmer at Bay Hill. I told somebody the other day, I was like, I've played with just about all those guys out there. I've played with DJ a lot. Long hitters. Jason Day, guys that can really send it. Here's the deal. What he did, that's one thing. A lot of them have some extra horsepower in there when they want it. That's one thing. It's a whole other thing to hit it on Saturday and Sunday when you're trying to win the golf tournament.
Right.
That is a different skill set. And that is what's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love Paul Azinger as a player. I respect him as a player. I'm not crazy about him as an announcer, actually, because I don't like when guys try to go, oh, he wanted to do, you don't know what somebody, I mean, I hear that all the time. Oh, he really wanted to make that? What are you talking about? I really want to make every putt I look at. That's stupid. Like, I don't like when guys say what he's wanted. You don't know what's going on in his head, because mm-hmm. I'm telling you, they don't know what's going on in my head. So the other day he said, well, playing golf with all that stuff and all that, I mean, that you just don't want to do that. I was like, no. You don't want to do that. That's the way he plays golf.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I mean, and I agree. I mean, you wouldn't want to see George Strait play a show the way that I play a show either, because I'm running around and dancing and jumping on things. I don't want to see George Strait do that. I want to see him stand there with his creased press Wranglers and his cowboy hat and a chambray shirt and sing me some good old country songs. So it's interesting. I think Bryson is, I just think it's unbelievable. Like I said, it's one thing to be able to try to do it, to be able to increases. Again, guys can swing harder out there, but they can't hit it in a 10-acre field.
Yeah, true.
It wasn't like Saturday morning when he got to that tee that he was first off and he was just going to try to do it. He's leading the golf tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come there Sunday and you're leading the golf tournament. Like, that's a different thing. That's a totally different thing altogether to me.
I remember watching him on Thursday, and I think he was -4 at the time.
Yeah.
And I was really hoping he'd stay around par up until that hole, because I didn't think he would do it.
Right.
Unfortunately, the wind was bad that day. I've had a chance to play Bay Hill once, and unfortunately the wind was in my face, so I chickened out. But I guess what he said afterwards is that he actually... Because the crowd had already known about it.
Oh, yeah.
It was a conversation, and he went to his bag and grabbed an iron and pulled it out and looked around just to give the crowd the grief they deserved before going back and grabbing driver. The guy's a character. I love it.
I think it's great for the game.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. When you look at it now, today especially, a lot of the younger players, it's become just way too robotic. Mm-hmm. If we want to grow the game, you got to have some personality. And, Bryson moves the needle.
No.
I love that. And the guy that I grew up since I was a kid playing with, we used to travel together. We're still good friends, Phil Mickelson. Phil is every bit as detailed in the crazy thoughts as Bryson does. He just didn't talk about it the way that Bryson does.
Mm-hmm.
But Bryson is just, he can write his name left-handed cursive upside down. Why the hell would you ever do that? people are like, I could do that. Well, my thought is, well, why? would you? He's just brain works differently, and I think it's awesome.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I've always been pretty heavy detractor on the guys who basically throw tantrums out there, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
They get real mad. They slam clubs. I find that appalling because of where they play and the experiences they get. But I have no problem with guys showing character. I think it's hilarious. Up until Hatton's a great example.
Yeah.
He is so funny when he's
he
upset.
He cracks me up. Have you ever seen a worse golf shot than that? No, seriously.
He goes, no, the answer's no.
The answer's no. Yeah, I don't know him. He's funny. Jordan's funny.
He gives a nice little club toss. That's harmless. Until you send that club into the ground, I think really funny.
Some of that stuff, get you get upset and everything.
Yeah.
And some of it is ridiculous. And now I know, because I've done those same ridiculous things. And you're like, that's not. No reason to do it.
Easy for
especially
us to say.
I got quite a few friends that are tour reps for different companies, and I almost to a man, when I said, "Hey man, what's up?" Their text always back is, "I'm just out here babysitting a millionaire crybaby." It's like,
wow.
I'm like, and there's more than one guy that has sent me that text back. I'm like, wow, okay. But everybody gets caught up in their deal. It's just things are different now, and access to things because of social media, which
presence,
is
absolutely.
Yeah, which is wonderful in a lot of ways. But you watch, athlete, you watch basketball today, and Jordan and guy, they didn't grow up with Bird, the era that I got, they didn't grow up in that era.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James is like possession to possession. He's the worst ever. He's the greatest ever. He's the worst. It's like this is changing 30 seconds to 30 seconds. It's crazy to me.
We're looking at you, golf Twitter, right now. So
insane. All the stuff that people say, so much of it, it's like, and again, you'll see, the square shoes. I've had a lot of people comment, that's not true. And I'm going, exactly. Tell me. So you're a scientist and you understand ground force and PSI and all that stuff and pressure. Well, no, I'm a math teacher. Okay. Well, then you go teach that and let the people that kind of stuff. It allows people to say whatever they want, which I'm by God, all about freedom of speech, but I do think there should be some consequences, as Clint Eastwood said, some consequences and repercussions.
It's called professional for a reason.
I tell people, when I was teaching golf a lot, I taught a lot of tour players, but I taught a lot of top juniors and everything. And, your typical, when you're young, your kid, a parent goes, well, you tell Billy to do this because he won't. And I say it, and they're like, oh, yeah. It's just, you have to use that correctly to make people understand what's going on and teach them correctly and mentor them correctly. And I still love teaching. I stand out there and teach 10 hours a day every day. I really like it.
Oh, we'll schedule the afternoon. I got a lot of work to do on my game. Hey, what's next for you, and what can people look forward to?
Got new music coming. Obviously last year was an incredibly difficult year for not just musicians but the world. But it really, really had an effect on my industry specifically. I've averaged over 125 shows a year for over 12 years. I played 31 last year.
Wow.
So it's tough. And not to mention just, I had to start an antidepressant during it because I was literally just like, I thought I was going to freak out. And it had nothing to do with money or anything. It's like, this is what I do. Like I, I go. I mean, obviously, it does have something to do with money because I got to pay bills and family and support the people that work for me, and I got a lot of responsibility there. But it's like I play golf. I mean, like I talk to my fans. This is what I do, and all of a sudden you can't do that. It was tough. So I'm ready for it to get back. I got some new music coming, which I think is some of the coolest stuff I've ever done, and it's so awesome to think that this will be my 8th studio album to go. Man, I think it's gotten better every time. I just keep trying to play music and have some fun. I got my new deal with Squares. We're doing some stuff, doing a lot of stuff there. I'm doing a lot of stuff with a big new tequila company called Commissario.
All right.
That is good. That is best tequila. I mean, it's unbelievable. That's a lot coming on with that coming up soon. So, yeah, a lot of stuff going. Just ready to get back to the world, get back after it, and you know,
good
some
for
sort
you.
Of normal.
Yeah.
Play some more golf.
Definitely.
I got to play, you know, 2 champions events last year, which was really cool. I got 2 exemptions, and to get back out and see guys that I grew up playing with and everything, mm-hmm. and to be back on that side of where it actually does matter. Like, it's not, you know, you play the Pro-Am, Pebble Beach. I got a Tour Pro as a partner, or a Stableford, kind of some of the celebrity events. It's not to say it's not real golf, but I mean, it's like, you know, it's not
fun golf.
It's not 4 days, put a score in a box or whatever. I mean, like, nowhere to hide. Like, people mm-hmm. can see you out there. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome. Like, the first event, like, I beat some guys, and there was a lot of chatter in the room, like, wait a minute. I mean, like, this is not okay. But it was the first time in a long time since my golf career that I was playing and practicing, like, really working on my game.
Mm-hmm.
And here with a lot of my buddies here in town before that first event up in South Dakota, they were like, oh my God, I'm shooting 65s and breaking par pretty much every time. They're like, you're going to go out there and you might win, you might not. I'm like, yeah, you don't know what you're saying. Like, I get it. They don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's just like people think, oh man, I'm a great singer. I'm like, that's great. Are you great? If there's 10,000 people out there, are you still great? I mean, like, there's a difference when that light comes on.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got out there, I got back, I'm like, they're like, you got the best short game I've ever seen. I'm like, it is the worst on the Champions Tour. As good as you think it is, because the last 15 years, they haven't put down a golf club. I have.
Yeah.
I didn't play for all those years, and I certainly didn't play competition, so it was fun. I played pretty good, and there was a lot of, I mean, like, beating some guys, they were like, wow, that's, I mean, like, the running bet was I wouldn't break 80, of course. I mean, which is, honestly, that's pretty, people don't realize, it's pretty normal. These guys think they're good players, and guys say, oh, there's a whole different level when you go to play out there.
Absolutely.
And there's a whole different thing. So, yeah, I was nervous. I mean, it's in South Dakota. Golf course was phenomenal. I get there, it's 90 degrees the day before I get there. I get there and get off the bus Monday morning, and it's 54 degrees, and the wind's blowing like 25. And I'm like, wait, what? Did we make a wrong turn or something? So only the last day was the weather like 65, 70 and sunny. The week after we left, it was back to like 85 or 90 again. It rained the first day, my very first event, rained the entire day. Did not take the rain gear off the entire day.
Wow.
And, you know, so it was fun. I mean, it was, the guys treated me so good. And it's just the game. People really, you know, go watch Champions Tour players, but honestly, like the LPGA girls, for normal golfers, they should go watch those, because that's more like some sense of normalcy as far as what most average golfers do, hitting the golf ball with in the distance wise and everything. But you go, like, I play a lot of those girls. I'm at the Quarter Sisters. I mean, they can freaking play.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's so extreme when you go to watch the PGA Tour, as fun as it is. Like, you just can't believe how far these freaking guys hit it. The guys that are short hit it far.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the guy that's 100th on distance right now on the PGA Tour would have been leading when I was playing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 284 is like, man, you might as well go on back and get you a job selling insurance or something.
Those guys, that athletic movement in golf has been fun to watch.
It's a different thing. I mean, and you get it when you see a DJ, because he's a freak of an athlete, and he's 6'3", you know, he's big and strong. Gary Woodland, big and strong. Koepka, big, strong. Bryson, big. Justin Thomas ain't big at all.
But like you said, that's a different style of swing now.
That's what I mean. I mean, you know, it's just, it's, they swing. I was never taught to swing hard as I could at it. Never. I never. And I ask a lot of guys now, like, do you remember? Very seldom did we ever. But I grew up with a persimmon driver and a golf ball that curved 40 yards if you hit it offline.
Yeah.
USGA just did a test last year, and they took new modern drivers versus persimmon drivers from like 85. and an eighth of an inch off center on the wooden driver is 46 yards distance loss at offline.
I believe it.
Eighth of an inch off new driver, six. So
well, there's a reason why they're at 430 to 450 and 460.
So. Yeah, man, it just is what it is.
Cool. Hey, it's been a pleasure having you on. And
man, yeah, I like this. I'd come do it with you guys anytime.
I love it. At the end of every off course, I absolutely invite my guests to ask any questions back to me. You might not have any, you might have 20. Let me know.
Oh, Lord, I don't know. I mean, I just love what you guys are doing to try cool. to grow the game of golf. I mean, I think it's, again, it's such a great game. Families can get involved with it. And, you know, there was the stigma that it's some elitist sport. And I think, you know, a lot of years ago, it was, you know, to that level. I mean, but now, I mean, there's so many public courses and you can grow the game. And I think, that, to me, that's just what it's all about. More people playing, the better. Good. I mean, it'll help you in business. A lot of these young kids need to learn that. Like, learn the game. It'll help you in business and doing some things that can help you in your career, no matter what it is. So I'm just excited at what y'all are doing with this. And anytime I can be a part of it or be on here, I'd love to.
Cool. Well, hey, thank you again. Good luck in the year upcoming for you. Obviously, things are changing. Probably.
Ready to get back to work, get this music out, and maybe play a little golf too.
All right. Everyone listening, if you're playing golf this weekend, have a great time. Play it well. And Colt Ford says, have fun doing it.
Have fun doing it. Remember, you're not good enough to get mad. I have to remember that now too. Crank some Colt Ford music up if you're listening to it on the course.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.